Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. This is the guilt podcast because we skipped the bye week. We're loading up with two this week, and we're just going to try to keep our focus on the Texas-Houston matchup. But there's been a couple of stories in college football that have been too good to pass up. You guys know my affinity for fat kickers. That has expanded, no pun intended, to fat quarterbacks. Although I've always loved fat quarterbacks, Jared Lorenzen kind of did that for me. And I introduced you guys to Deacon Hill a couple of weeks ago, the Iowa backup quarterback who's replaced Cade McNamara. Jumbo boy, about 6'2", 260. And he led the Hawkeyes to a resounding victory last week. Randy, are you familiar with his awesome performance?
I would use the word led. In a different manner than which I think it is typically attributed, but sure, if we'll go with lead.
Okay. Well, lead as an LEAD, right?
Yeah,
as in a weight on your offense.
That's kind of what I was going with there.
So for the season, Mr. Hill is 27 of 70. That's 27 completions out of 70 attempts. My trusty math tells me that that is a 38.6% completion percentage. He has 311 yards on those 70 attempts for 4.4 yards per attempt. And his longest completion is 33 yards, which is a miracle of God. He's averaging 52 yards passing per game, Randy. And by the way, they don't run the option. This isn't Air Force Academy.
If I had a glutton for punishment, I would go back and try and find that 33 yard completion and see exactly how far that ball traveled in the air, because I guarantee it was probably maybe 2 to -2 yards
yes,
somewhere in there, and a whole lot of yards after the catch.
And then someone ran with
I'm not going to go back and watch Iowa football voluntarily. So,
well, against the other juggernaut of the Big Ten West, the Wisconsin Badgers, who have had their own quarterback woes from import Tanner Mordecai, Deacon was 6 of 14 for 37 yards. So
I mean, that box score is going to be the ugliest thing in the world, right?
Well, what that tells you is statistics are for losers, and Deacon Hill is a winner.
That's right.
That's what that tells you.
Sign him up.
That's right. If we had Deacon Hill, this team would be undefeated.
Wisconsin threw 50 passes in that game?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, Iowa is now 6-1. It is within the realm of possibility, given the pathetic Big Ten West schedule, that these guys go 11-1, 10-2, and play, obviously, in the Big Ten title game, where they will probably score no points.
And win somehow.
And somehow win on penetrations, right? Back in the old days of high school football.
Yeah, we're going to bring back the old UIL rules. Absolutely.
Got past the 50 the most times.
That's right.
Here's the crazy thing. We've talked about Brian Ferentz's contract. He is tracking well behind his average, Randy.
Yeah.
Even in victory.
Well.
Here's the problem. He needs to not make the Big Ten title game, because they're going to get shut out or score 3 points. That's going to go into his average. He's got to find a way. He's got to find a way to score a lot of points, so his average goes up to 25, but not play well enough to make the Big Ten title game, because that's going to bring his average down to 23.4 or something.
What if he's saving all of his offense for the Big Ten title game?
What if they just come out and they run this no huddle, hurry up, five wide spread, and Deacon Hill throws for 630 yards and 8 touchdowns? Like old school run and shoot Houston Cougars circa 1990.
He's playing the long game, man. He's playing the long game.
he's playing a game just, so long I can't even
just
see
wait.
It.
Just wait. He's playing the long game.
Oh man. Unbelievable. Well, hey, there is a guy that we know that is always playing the long game for his clients. His name is David McClellan. He is a fantastic guy and a great sponsor of this podcast. Randy, I don't know about you, but I noticed that men in general tend to overestimate their knowledge in a few areas. Namely, the ones I encounter are sports, and I would also say finance. Do you think that's a fair accusation at the male species?
I would say you're pretty on point there. Yeah.
All right. Well, even if you think your financial acumen is up to snuff, and I'd say especially if you think it's up to snuff, and you've been making the right moves, and you've built yourself quite a nest egg, and you're someone who's wealthy or approaching wealth, David is someone you need to talk to. Have him kick the tires on your strategies, your tactics, your portfolio. And if you think there's an opportunity for y'all to work together, great. If not, you got a great 30-minute checkup from an expert financial mechanic. And that's how I want you to view this. Give David a call. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. He is a fiduciary registered investment advisor with Forum Financial Management. He's also a partner in that organization. He's got extensive background with Morningstar and Pershing. He's not just a guy who's a financial planner who's been doing this all his life. He's actually rolled up his sleeves and been a part of this industry and knows it backwards and forwards. He also is a retirement planning expert. And by expert, I mean, he's written white papers on it that are referenced by other financial planners all throughout the country. So talk to the guy who's the expert. Talk to David McClellan, 312-933-8823. And then, of course, if you are interested in getting a mortgage, looking for a house, there's a guy that Randy and I know and know well. And Randy's used, legitimately, three times now?
Yep, three times.
Legit, amazing.
Like, no exaggeration needed.
And you would say that Gabe Winslow's performance was below average. Is that fair?
He performs just like Martin Maldonado.
It's not true.
I love Martin. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's true. Randy's the guy who likes Martin. That's right.
No. Yes. No. He was absolutely excellent in all three encounters, and all three were very different in the way we attacked them as well. So he definitely has a wide knowledge and a wide playbook of how best to get his client the best deal.
Yeah, one thing I begrudgingly praise Gabe, but no, actually he is phenomenal at this. And the one thing that he does have a crazy sixth sense on is I know several people who have reached out to him and Gabe has told them hold.
Yep.
Things are about to get better like 9 days from now. And the person's like, okay. And Gabe will be like, just give me your number. I'll call you and I'll tell you it exactly. Meanwhile, get in all your stuff to me, get everything, get all your I's, dotted, your T's crossed. And I'm going to make sure you get the best possible deal. And 9 times out of 10, that freaking guy nails it. It's kind of amazing. And now he can't always do that. So I don't want to overpromise and have him underdeliver, but there are times when he can see the market moving and he knows exactly what's going to happen. Most mortgage guys would never tell you hold because they're worried in that 9 days, you're going to go to someone else. Gabe is looking out for you. And that's why he's willing to do that. So give him a call. You can reach him at, do you know the number yet, Randy? Have you memorized it?
No, I'm terrible with memorizing things.
I am too, but it's 832-557-1095. That's how you can reach Gabe. We really appreciate both David and Gabe. Thanks for supporting the podcast. And thanks for doing right by so many different Longhorns who have taken advantage of picking up the phone and calling you. All right. You got anything in the broader college football world we need to touch on before we talk a little U of H and a little bit of Texas?
What's your take on this whole, the Pac-12 is the mecca of college football this year?
Well, that's an interesting point. So it's not the Big Ten. The Big Ten is top heavy to say the
very,
least, right?
Yeah, very, very much so.
All right, well, let's define eliteness in conference, because I think you and I are on the same page. It can't just be you have some good teams at the top. You need to have some players beneath the top two or three. Is that fair?
No, absolutely.
Okay. So I think on that measure, that's where the pack really distinguishes itself. Because you've got, all right, so the Big Ten is basically Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Everyone else is trash. Or competitive trash, like our beloved Iowa. The Big 12 is a mess. ACC, pretty decent at the top, I'd say, compared also to their history.
Yeah, I think they're top heavy, but they're a little deeper.
The bottom of the ACC is really bad.
Yep.
really bad. And then so you get to the SEC. Look, this is not a sterling SEC year, right? It just isn't. Now, there are some good teams in the middle that have emerged that I think are being maybe discounted a little too much. I'm thinking of like Missouri.
Yeah, I think there's some teams that have found their way.
LSU.
And some teams that kind of stumbled a little early, but have sort of found their footing. I would throw both of those in there.
But at the top, other than Georgia, and I'd say Georgia even has a couple of questions, the SEC is not very strong.
Yeah, I think Georgia now without Bowers is definitely going to have to kind of reinvent itself offensively.
All right, so that's all a buildup for the pack. So I think we like Washington. I think we agree Oregon's a good football team. USC is a high-scoring football team, potentially, if Caleb Williams doesn't throw three picks in the first half. Oregon State, I think, is good. I think Utah's good if Cam Rising ever comes back. Other than that, I think they're sort of – I think they're a very competitive team. They're limited.
They're limited.
Mm-hmm. Arizona, speaking of a team finding its way.
Coming out of nowhere, yep.
They're a good team now. And UCLA, if they can figure out quarterback, I think they're actually pretty good. What's interesting to me is the bottom of the pack, which is usually just dreadful. Like – Colorado obviously isn't good, but they're 4-3 football team, right? Cal is not good, but they're not horrific. I mean, they were basically equal to Auburn when they played earlier in the year.
Yeah, no, anybody in that conference, I don't think you can just roll in, which is definitely not the case in years past. But I think that like you're saying, I think the top is really buoyed by quarterback play. I'm not sure how great defensively any of them are. I think maybe Oregon's run defense probably carries them to the top of the defensive metrics in my mind. But I mean, they just ran up against Penix and offense that was firing pretty much all cylinders. And then we already touched on their game management decisions in that one. But it's interesting that, you know, just interesting to me that you got a whole lot of transfer quarterbacks in there that are kind of the straw that stirs the drink for each one of those teams. And then a guy that everybody kind of regarded as a really good coach in Fish that, you know, jury was kind of out. But I think last couple of weeks have proved that I think that's probably going to be a good hire for them.
Yeah, they're his little 5'10".
Yeah,
Samoan Tongan quarterback is pretty awesome, man. There's no way they need to give Jaden Delora the job back.
No, that guy's the guy.
He got Wally pipped. Yep. I think, you know, it'd be interesting if you, like they do in basketball, with college basketball season not too far away. You know how they'll do the invitational tournaments where it's just like Big Ten takes on the Big 12 and you just seed everybody and have at it. It would be interesting to do that with the PAC and the SEC this year. I think the SEC would come out ahead, but it depends how you divided it. If you took the top six teams and played them, I don't know if it would be, I think it might be 3-3 or it might be 4-2 SEC. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would be much more coin toss than in any year in recent history for sure.
Yeah, and I'm assuming neutral sites. And by the way, on the seeding, I might actually have Oregon number one in the pack.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, they lost the game, but I think Texas is better than OU, and I think Oregon's better than Washington. But
yeah, I would say so. I mean, they're on the road there, and like I said, I mean, once again, you know, game management didn't do them any favors. Which I mean, if they hit on those decisions, then we're not having this conversation. But
100%. Yeah, would be really curious to watch are some of the matchups like Oregon State, who plays a different brand of football.
I think they're much more complete, but I think they're also much more complete average.
Yeah.
Than, you know, if that even makes sense, I don't know. But I think you can say that offensively and defensively, they're a much more complete team, but they're also nowhere near as explosive as the offensive output of Washington or Oregon.
Tell you what, I would pay to watch LSU Washington at a neutral field.
Ooh, man.
Because LSU can't stop nobody.
Could you just play that game against air and just
yes,
like
it's the
watch
same.
It like just watch it go back and forth down the field?
Just have the two defenses agree to sit out.
That's the game where we have the, you know, everybody that's talking about it all week talks about it being 60 to something and the final score is 14-13 or something like that. That would absolutely be what would happen.
It tell you what, if you gamble enough, that's exactly the kind of thing that happens. I mean, so to give you an example, Monday night, Dallas, San Diego, or sorry, I always do that. Dallas, Los Angeles Chargers.
Everybody knew what you were saying. It's fine.
Okay, thank you. That was supposed to be a scoring fest.
Yep.
And it was like every yard, every first down, you were like, thank God. Oh, I hope we can get a field goal. Right. And then, you know, they grind it out and it's 2017. That happens. I'm telling you now, Washington LSU would deliver. And I tell you what, I'm pretty sure Washington would win it.
I think Penix is really, really freaking good. I think Daniels is good, but
he's awesome.
That dude made some decisions and some throws in that game that you don't see college quarterbacks make much.
Hey, you know what's wild about markets and what's interesting? There's an inefficiency in it. So Penix has this amazing performance. He's been lighting it up all year. His stats are like impeccable. He's got an undefeated team. They've got the inside track in the pack to the playoff. His Heisman odds are like minus 140.
Yeah.
Meaning you're not even getting even money for betting him to win the Heisman now. Bo Nix is 30-1. Jalen Daniels is like 25 or 30-1. If you should never bet on the Heisman because it's stupid. But
yes, for
if
sure.
You're a value better, you should bet Bo Nix. Hope Oregon meets them in the Pac title game. That will be on in Vegas on Friday night, and it'll be a primetime crowd. So like actually, East Coast voters will actually see this game. If Bo Nix wins that game, he'll win the Heisman.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, maybe, you know, obviously Oregon has a lot of work to do, but that's kind of the crazy bet you make. Or Jalen Daniels. You pick LSU to win out in the SEC and beat Georgia, right? And Jalen Daniels, he's playing amazing. He's got great receivers. And LSU's defense is so bad that he has to stay out there. He keeps racking up statistics, even against bad teams. So... yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing is people have these – Penix was underrated before the year. He seemed like an obvious Heisman dark horse or second or third pick if you don't just mail it in for Caleb Williams. But then you have this massive market overreaction that you can't even, like, double your money voting for him to win the Heisman. There's a lot of football left to be played, oh, dude.
Yep.
Like, I was listening to a podcast, and a guy was making the case for if you have a Heisman money you want to spend – do it on Quinn Ewers and Dylan Gabriel. Like, I don't agree, but that's the perception.
Maybe he's a genius, but I don't see it.
Yeah, he is. The look on your face suggests that you don't think he's a genius, Randy.
No, I don't.
All right, man. Well, let's apply our genius to breaking down this game against U of H. Look, I don't pretend to be the U of H expert. I've watched... I'd say 9 quarters of their football, which was enough, given that 3 of those quarters were against UTSA, and that's time in my life I can't get back. I'll say this. They're better. You know, teams can improve. They are better than they were at the beginning of the year. But at the beginning of the year, they were atrocious. So what do we make of this? What are the goals in this game? Do you want to talk? You want to start with that, or do you want to do like a quick overview of U of H?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can do a quick overview if you want to start there. I mean, I think the offense begins and ends with Mr. Smith and getting him uncomfortable and not letting get him established in a rhythm.
Agreed. So Donovan Smith, of course, is the transfer from Texas Tech. Texas Tech would like to have him right now.
Yes.
But Donovan is peaced out and he's not going back to Lubbock. So, he's played well. He's played the best he's ever played. Texas fans have a tendency to any player that plays well against Texas is amazing. and they ignore the other body of work. I mean, Donovan Smith, two games after he beat Texas, in quotes, was benched for being terrible. And Texas fans were like, oh, that guy's awesome. And it's like,
yeah,
they had the higher score on the scoreboard at the end of the game. He's not Deacon Hill, but no.
Tech didn't think so. They let him go.
No, they didn't think so. They thought he was their third string quarterback, but one man's junk is another man's treasure. Holgo found him, put a little Brasso on him, rubbed it up, and look, Donovan Smith's playing good football. So, I'll give you my quick scouting report. He's a big, strong guy. He is not a runner. He's run capable.
Correct.
Meaning he's 6'5", 240. And if he starts running forward, it's third and two, he'll get the first down if you don't hit him in the backfield. He's a decent scrambler. I mean, he's mobile. He's not immobile. He's not a statue back there. He has not great pocket presence. If you take away his first or second read or things aren't going the way he wants, he's not captain checkdown. His checkdown is his legs or just sort of running around. And that leads to big sacks, that leads to turnovers, stuff like that. But this year has been the first year he's taken pretty good care of the football. I think Holgo is a good quarterback coach. I think he's done good work with him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
But he's still a three route quarterback. You know, he throws really well in the middle of the field and throws a decent deep ball if it's open and he can set and like establish his base. And then everything else is dink and dunk. You know, he's not nailing a 20 yard out. He's not throwing a perfect curl route 20 yards down the field like Ewers does, right? He's not that refined. So once again, Pete Kwiatkowski has a scouting report on a quarterback and he has the opportunity to place defenders where the guy wants to throw the ball. So we'll see if he does that.
No, agreed. I mean, the two things that kind of jump out about him is he's taking care of the ball. You know, I don't know if he's put the ball into harm's way, but if he has, then he's gotten lucky because, you know, he's only had the three interceptions. Good completion percentage. But I agree with you. I think his route diversity and what he can really execute is limited. So do we game plan for that or do we not have as we have in the past?
Yeah. I'll just sort of hit on the studs real quick before I talk about their deficiencies on offense. Probably their best player on offense is actually their tackle. It's Patrick Paul. He's an NFL prospect. If you go on PFF, he's their highest rated player, when deservedly so. He's about 6'7", 315. Great base, great pass set. He's long, he's strong. And if he doesn't make a mistake, you're not going to beat him as a pass blocker. He's a capable run blocker as well. The tackle on the other side, I think it's Inouye is how it's pronounced, is bad. So Texas has interesting information there. If you want to waste Baron Sorrell on Patrick Paul, let's have Anthony Hill coming on the other side.
Yeah, no, I think you sacrifice a body on one side.
And then on the interior, they've got a good center, Jack Freeman. And then their two guards are just Jags.
Does the Texas guy play?
Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson.
He starts for them. And then they also had...
There's another guy too, right?
Who is the slow-footed guy that blew out both knees?
Garth?
Garth. Like yes, yeah. Jalen Garth. He was starting for them. They benched him.
Gotcha. I hadn't followed him close enough to know that. I was curious.
The running backs are Jags. They're just FBS running backs, which is like a good athlete.
Right.
Like if there's a hole, he'll do stuff. Their receivers are good. So
that would be the point that I would make is their receiving core, I think, is definitely a much higher level than what you would expect from them and their record and their output at this point.
Yeah. The transfer from West Virginia, Brown, has been their best receiver. He was the guy who actually caught the Hail Mary against West Virginia. He's been their leading receiver. Their best receiver, though, is Matthew Golden. Golden kind of gets the injury bug around this time every year, and he's missed a couple of games. He missed, I think, a half against West Virginia with a groin. He's kind of one of those, you know, the wide receivers that are Ferraris and they're sort of always in the shop because they're so finely tuned.
Yeah.
I think he's that guy. And then you've got the guys that are, I don't know, what's a really durable sports car? I don't know enough about cars. Is there, or are they all cantankerous?
I think they're all wide receivers.
All right. Well, Xavier Worthy in the wide receiver world, kind of like an F-150, even though he's a little skinny guy, right? He'll keep playing through injury and he hangs in there. So I don't know whether Golden is healthy or not for Texas. If he can go, he's going to go. The other guy, I love this guy, transfer from USC, Manjack. That's their third receiver.
All name team for sure.
No doubt. Do you think we can keep him in hand?
Let's hope so. I wish we had a cornerback that was even better play on words, but we don't have it.
You hope to have a cornerback with enough stroke that to take care of him. You know what I mean? But that's defense. I mean, so, you know, serviceable quarterback who's very limited in what he can do, but what he can do, he does pretty well.
If you allow them to do what they are capable of doing, then they will more than happily go up and down the field on you doing it. You just have to make them play left-handed.
One thing about Houston, and this has been characteristic of Houston in general, but also particularly during Holgo's time, they're just sort of dumb. And they make a lot of dumb errors. And they get personal fouls. They're the guys that like cheap shot someone on the pile, like right in front of the ref. And you're like, why? Like, why? Why did you do that? Yep. If they have a screen that goes for 70, there's a 50% chance there's a hold. You know, it's that team. We'll see. We'll see if the Big 12 crew feels like throwing flags or not. But that's it, man. I mean, the wide receiver, I mean, group is good. They're certainly capable. The quarterback is serviceable. They've got one standout offensive lineman. And then the rest of the guys range from jag to sort of above average. So they should be able to get pressure on Donovan Smith. They should be able to completely stone their running game. And then Holgo is a very creative guy. So I don't doubt he'll have a good game plan for us.
Yeah, he's especially good if he's got a game circled, which I'm sure he has this one. So,
well, he's already done the press conference that every other coach has freaking done, which is everyone's told me in the offseason is go 1-11 as long as you beat Texas. Yeah. So, yeah, good. Way to build out a nice balanced life, people, everybody.
Then you talk about how awesome we were for 20 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Holgo actually likes Texas.
Really? Well, he's one of the few opposing coaches.
Yeah. No, I think he just likes like the school and like what, like the history. And
where's he from?
Are
you a Texas guy?
I think he's from Iowa. Yeah. Holgo's history is he played for Leach, right?
He's of the tree.
Yeah. I think he was a wide receiver for Leach at like some little Iowa college. And yeah, pretty interesting. If he gets fired, which there's a decent chance he will be.
I'd take him.
I think we need to bring him on as a special assistant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Analyst.
And I think he'd be very happy to live in Austin for a couple of years.
Davenport, Iowa.
There you go.
Played at Iowa Wesleyan. I think that, there you go. That would be the.
He was a wide receiver.
Valdez State. Then he was at Texas Tech from 2000 to 2004.
Yes, sir.
And then, well, I take that back. 2000, 2004, then 05, 06, co-OC, 07, OC.
All right, for amusement, before we talk about the Houston Cougar defense or their lack of defense at times, can you please share with the audience what you texted me about Texas A&M?
I was listening to a national podcast. National podcast today, and they're falling all over themselves about how amazing the A&M defense is, and they can't understand how this is all happening. And I was like, well, the front seven's really good, but the back half, not so much.
But explain the defense is so good.
Are you talking about the second part of the text? Yes. Yes. So I can't even remember who the podcast anyway, but their reasoning was that the talent level has been increased some, and this is more of an indictment on the national media than it is on anything else, but they're so much more talented now under Fisher than they were under Kevin Sumlin, because under Sumlin they averaged 11.3 in recruiting rankings, and Fisher has got them all the way up at 7.4.
Boom, right there.
Like, wow. Unbelievable.
So their defense is awesome.
It's like, I don't know where. It's like, I mean, I know these people have like time to fill during the week, and I'm glad they have it, because otherwise I wouldn't have anything to listen to when I was driving around. But man, it's crazy. It's like, have y'all watched the game? Have y'all watched them play yet? It's like,
this is what happens when you talk about
the front's really good. Yes, absolutely.
When you're not an expert. And so there's an Iowa random listener going, the 33-yard pass was a great throw. It went It went about 35 yards. It was actually a little bit across. It was an out. It was an awesome throw, man. So you're wrong.
Yeah, he actually lost 2 yards after the catch.
That's right.
Coming back to the ball.
That's right.
Yeah, but no.
So I just love that inferential thinking, right? They're awesome because look at their recruiting ranking average. It's four. Yeah. It's four places higher.
That's what the follow-up text was. Tom Herman's number three class of all defensive backs would like a word.
Defensive tackles too.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Oh yeah.
The class of beef that turned out to be,
that didn't work out so well.
Beyond meat.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. Good so stuff. Well. All right. Well, that was our little, I just wanted to entertain everybody with that little snippet.
That was great. Great analysis from those guys. It was awesome.
All right. The Houston defense, Randy, I already told you about their woes on money downs, third and fourth down. They're giving up over 50% on third and fourth down. They're giving up 89% on fourth down. So look for Texas to go for it on fourth and two at midfield, folks. I'm just giving you a preview on that one. They're giving up 31 points per game, 6.2 yards per play. Here's the thing. Those statistics in isolation aren't great. You don't want to give up 6.2 yards per play on defense. They haven't played good offenses, man.
No, not at all.
I mean, West Virginia has a capable offense, capable like lowercase c.
Yeah, I was about to say you're probably being a little
but
generous there, but okay.
Green threw for 391 on them.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Rice, I respect that JT Daniels has found his level, right? The water found its level. I acknowledge that Rice can throw the ball around a little bit. We played him. Like, JT Daniels threw for 400 yards on him. Mm-hmm. Now, I agree Houston can improve, but West Virginia was last week. So, now I do think Houston overloaded the box to try to stop the run and make Green beat him. And Green beat him.
Agreed.
So, at least they beat their defense. He couldn't throw an extra. He didn't have enough time to throw a third Hail Mary in a row. But I thought that was interesting. Interesting thing about their defense, kind of like their offense. And this is something I wrote in my preseason mag, Randy, not a book. It's a magazine. they've got the thing with Houston is they've got individual players where you're like, that guy's a good player. And then the dude next to him, you're like, how did he get on a like major college football team? Right. It's almost like FCS where you'll see a guy and you're like, whoa, like, so there's this white receiver for Texas State. Have you seen this guy at all?
Oh, what number is he? Yes, I have. I'm trying to think.
He's
of
the white guy.
Name.
You don't need the number.
Yeah. I can't think of his name. I got a couple of them.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, but I don't know who you're talking about. And I know the point you're going to make, too.
His name's like, Joey Hobert.
Hobert, there you go. So, yeah.
He has the most amazing hands in college football. And he
catches everything.
He's a 4-5 guy, and he catches literally everything. He would start for Texas.
Hmm?
Like, that's his superpower, and Sark would love him. There's another receiver in their receiver core where you're like, hey, man, you know, you couldn't walk on here.
Yep.
And you have this uneven, and that's kind of what Houston's like, not to that degree, but they've got a couple of guys on defense who are like, whoa, who's that?
Well, I think that's why you see their defense perform the way they do. You know, they have a bunch of picks. They'll have five good plays in a row and then three plays, you're like, what, hold on, is this the same team we were just watching? And just, it depends on, it's got to be maddening as a defensive coordinator trying to like mask all these inefficiencies of, okay, how do we hide this again? Okay, how do we hide this again? And just,
all right, so they play sort of a base 4-2-5. They shift around, but it's a 4-2-5 nickel. Here's the basic way to explain their defense. They have a good edge named Nelson Caesar. They have three good defensive backs, a corner and two safeties. And that's the team.
I was about to say,
that's the defense.
That's about it.
Their linebackers, I mocked the crap out of Kansas's linebackers. I was like, these are the worst linebackers in the Big 12. Houston said, hold my beer.
Yeah.
And they have bad linebackers. So what they do, they just fire them every play.
Yeah, I was about to say, they just run them all over the place and hope they run into something.
They just run them through a gap and hope that they disrupt something. And so the key is you got to cover everybody up and you got to make sure you watch the back door before you take off, you know, trying to help someone out on a pass rush or run block or anything.
Yep.
So, but their linebackers suck. Their other interior defensive linemen are just sort of squatty dudes, like just whatever, dime a dozen. And then Caesar's good. And then they got David Agbuegu from OU, the transfer. He played linebacker for them. They moved him to edge at Houston. He's okay. He's fine. And then the best corner on their team, this is what's wild about football and the transport portal and all this. Isaiah Hamilton played 3 years at Texas Southern, transfers to U of H, and he's their best DB. And he's legitimately like pretty good. He's very inconsistent. He's a ball hawk. Like, he's got three picks on the year. He goes for picks. And if he doesn't get the pick, you might score a touchdown going, you know, 60 yards the other way. But he's that dude. You know, those guys can be a little scary, right? They've got a guy who transferred to Mexico named Halsey. AJ Halsey.
Yep.
Terrible in coverage. Worthless in coverage, but he weighs about 215, and he knocks the crap out of people every game I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's their second leading tackler, and that's his deal. They try to keep him out of coverage as much as possible.
And then they got the other safety I referenced that was good is Malik Fleming. Picture a petite size Quandre Diggs. He's 5'8". I think he weighs 175.
I was about to say he's small, small guy.
But he's small. He's not thick like Quandre. Like Quandre is like a 6'2", 200-pound guy that just got mashed in a trash compactor. This guy's little, he's light, but he runs around everywhere and hits people and causes disruption. He's got two or three picks too.
I was going to say Hamilton and him, they have seven picks on the year. Hamilton and him have six of them.
There you go. And then Halsey's their tackler. He's their box safety. They've got one edge to be concerned about. That's the defense, man.
Yep. Nope. You're right.
So you could throw on them. You can run on them. U of H, I've noticed more often than not, we'll say, in certain games, hey, if you light us up throwing the ball, fine, but you're not going to run on us. And we're going to outnumber the box. And Halsey's going to come sprinting downhill and be the seventh or eighth guy in the box, depending on your set. And, you know, it's a way to play football, right? If you think your offense can match them.
Yeah, I mean, if I had that personnel on defense, that's probably what I would go with.
Let's
try to wreak havoc and make them complete the passes, right?
Well, because otherwise it's just slow death by the running game, right? And your assets, which is three DBs, are kind of just useless.
Yeah, they're just hanging out back there.
And they're forcing your little guy, who's kind of disruptive, to come up and tackle, and then he's not very good, right? So I think that's the way to go. That said, three different opponents have rushed for over 200 yards against them. Three different opponents have rushed for over 300 yards against them. A couple of those were the same opponent. The 300-200 combo. Some are different. Did you see balloons? Did I do that?
Yeah, I didn't. I promised you that. That was
So
awesome.
we're on a Zoom.
As Paul says, three different opponents have rushed for over 300 yards. Somebody released the happy birthday balloons and they just went crazy.
We're on Zoom and there's a graphic that just popped up where balloons were released behind my head. Randy's losing it.
It's
So
great.
the first time, one of the first times we Zoomed, I was just screwing around with the graphics, like waiting for Randy to get on. And I ended up putting a mustache on myself and I couldn't get it off. So I did the whole Zoom with like, what was it, kind of like a Hitler mustache, right?
It was, yeah, very Hitlerish, but it didn't follow your head very well.
No.
So it would kind of just hang out in the middle of the screen as your face moved around.
It looked like a caterpillar.
The balloons weren't that good, but the mustache is pretty good.
I didn't touch anything. I don't know.
Oh man,
was
that
there
was
a,
awesome.
Was there a verbal trigger?
It's gotta be a verbal cue on that.
What, like, you know how when you so I just did this recently. I've got a buddy who's a retired special forces guy, Green Beret. And I, it was his birthday, I think. So I just texted him, man, hey, happy birthday. And that made like the little balloons. And I was like, I didn't mean to send the balloons, man. And he was like, it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have to go back and listen to it and see what you said to trigger that. That was
that's amazing. So stupid.
Oh man.
All right. Any thoughts on Houston, ways to attack this group? Just look, what do we want to see out of Texas?
I first of all, I want to see a team come out that has put the OU game and the bye week behind them. I don't want to see U of H out effort us early.
Yeah.
Football's football, but I don't want them to hang around. I mean, I know things can happen early to where momentum and such, but preferably come out, set the tone, and then ride out a comfortable victory, as I feel should happen. But that would be the biggest disappointment to me, is if we come out and we're not prepared for a team that is probably going to be firing on all cylinders early for a shot at their last shot for the foreseeable future at Texas.
You know, early in the year, I circled this as a game where we might have an offensive high mark for the season. I was thinking this game could be 52-24, like getting up and down the field. U of H may have some
As well, yeah.
Plays up their sleeve and just sort of the pace of the game. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to hold true or how Sark wants to play this. I will be very irritated if we're not highly aggressive on third and fourth down, particularly anywhere past the Texas 45-yard line, to be honest. I think if we can retain the ball and go score.
Yeah. No, I'm probably going to regret saying this, but I'm not as worried about the offensive side of things. I think we have enough weapons and enough ways to get it done that the game plan and whatever can be tweaked to adjust if need be. The biggest thing for me is from a defensive standpoint. I just, if we don't play an aggressive style or aggressive call, we just don't play aggressive. And I would be very disappointed to see a shell look that we end up playing passive.
Do you know who is going to be healthy for this game? Do you have any insight?
You probably have more than I do, but everything that Sark said at the press conference and everything was that for the most part, everybody practiced in some form or fashion. I'd be shocked if Majors played. Didn't sound like Hudson was really in the cards either. So I think you're looking at another week of Robertson at center.
JT Sanders.
Man, I wouldn't. I don't think I'd play him unless he was all the way back.
If he's good to go, roll him out.
Yeah, I mean, if he's good to go, great. But I mean, he was obviously not good to go 2 weeks ago. And I mean, kudos to the kid for wanting to play, but you gotta know when he's that limited.
Well, Gunnar Helm, 67 yards receiving against OU, career high. Is it safe to say we should run our offense through Gunnar Helm?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That wouldn't be reactionary at all, would it? He did play well, though. I will say that.
Yeah.
He's more athletic than I thought. He moves better than I thought he did.
We actually foreshadowed the OU performance a little bit, all joking aside, because you and I were like, hey, on a couple of balls last week, who did we play before OU? I can't remember.
Yes, Kansas.
Kansas. Remember, he caught a couple of balls. We're like, yeah, man, he looked pretty good in space there. That was good. Yeah. It's like, wow. Yeah.
No, he moves a lot better than I thought. I just didn't pay much attention to him before, but I mean, he's more than serviceable out there, and he holds his own blocking.
Yeah, I wonder if Houston's aware of our center situation. I'm sure they are.
It wouldn't surprise me to see them put some sort of double A gap pressures and such.
Just see if we can handle it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And knowing that we know, I would think we want to have the throwback screen early. Jonathan Brooks. Hey, first play of the game. You agree we should throw out wide to Xavier Worthy against numbers, right?
I'd like to see something. I can't fault the one last week because we probably would have got like 40 yards on the first play if Sanders would have just like remotely
touched someone.
Fell down in the vicinity of the guy that made the tackle. But yeah, I mean, let's maybe not throw the bubble screen on the first two plays of some sort.
Is that even a bubble screen?
No, it's not. I just didn't really know what to call it.
Yeah, throw it out to Xavier.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I've seen that where, say you're in trips and they have two guys like staggered back a little, then one guy's way back. Yep. And you just go, hey, throw it to the middle trips guy, you other two block, and you're going to get 7 yards. That's mm-hmm. fine. But we never have numbers when we throw it out there. No. So I'm not quite sure what it is achieving other than second and 15.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the thought is your guy makes a guy miss type deal, but
oh yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I mean, last week if Sanders would have blocked that guy, then I mean, you're probably looking at 15 to 20 easy.
For sure.
But he didn't. And relying on a guy that you watched run in pregame, I assume, to make that block is a little head scratcher to me.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's true. I think this could be a total offensive performance if it. I think it'll be staggered. I think it's going to be fits and sparks. Like, I think there's going to be big plays. I think there's going
to
be.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to, like, we talked about them firing linebackers and running around. It wouldn't surprise me to see them hit a couple rush lanes and inflict some negative plays here and there. But I think they're going to give up their share of big plays off of it.
And I think the point is that third and 13 against U of H is not a death sentence.
Correct.
Like, don't lay up on offense and concede. Yep. Oh, let's throw a little flare pass and get 7 yards and punt.
Yeah, if they shoot a gap and tackle Brooks for 4 yards, that doesn't mean you can't turn around and run the same play two plays later and
get 18.
Yash him for 18.
100%. That's how I feel about it too. I think this is a chance for Texas to do a 300, 100, 100. I think Brooks could rush for over 100. Yeah, I think Ewers can throw for over 3. I think one of the receivers will get over 100.
Yeah, I tell you one thing I'd love to see on offense is a running play philosophy and or scheme found out and then beaten to death to where they know you're going to run it. And we sort of establish, hey, we're going to be a X running play team moving forward. Good luck stopping it.
Agreed. Any closing thoughts on this game?
Not really.
Nope.
Glad the bye week's over.
Who's excited about
watching a game again?
Me too. Who's the best team in college football right now?
Michigan.
Yep. That's kind of how I feel. It's still way early.
It's very early. I mean, there's a lot of improvement that's going to happen between now and then. And if Bowers didn't get hurt, I would lean more towards the talent there. I just think he unlocks their offense. And I don't know what's the timeline to come back from the little fancy ankle surgery. I know it cuts it down, but I don't know. It didn't cut it down to like nothing.
It's 4 to 6 weeks, but if you're concerned about your NFL draft status,
yeah,
that's, it might be never.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
I don't know. I think it's, I agree with you. It's Michigan.
Yeah, I agree with you. The thing is, it's like, to quote the Big Lebowski, that's just like our opinion, man, because Michigan's played no one.
They've played no one in the great, what's the great equalizer in college football, right? Quarterback play. And I don't know that they have the next level. I'm going to take the game over and render whatever you do defensively useless guy back there.
Yeah. Yeah. The teams that have that guy aren't a complete enough team, probably.
Yep.
Like Washington as a playoff team doesn't strain your belief, right?
No, not at all.
Washington winning the national title, that would shock you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It would shock me too.
Yeah.
So
if you let me pick a team to play out of, you know, the top five next week, I mean, and I picked Washington out of a hat, I'd be like, oh man, we got to deal with Penix. But I mean, it's not like I'd just be falling all over myself. Like, we don't have a chance. Right. I mean,
yeah. We'll talk about salt in the wound. When you said, if I could pick a team from the top five, I'd be like, oh, you.
Yeah.
That's who I'd pick.
But I don't think they're in the top five. So
they are in the poll.
That's, yeah, those people.
Oh, Randy's top about, five. So. Sorry. I forgot Randy's top five.
I'm talking about
privy to.
My hat.
Oh, your hat. Okay. All right.
So, but no, they've earned their spot there. I think there's some holes that can be taken advantage of that probably no one else on their schedule is going to take advantage of. So,
agreed 100%. Yeah. I think the frustrating thing, and look, obviously, Texas has plenty of goals still ahead of them and lots that can make the season fun and special. But man, there's not a dominant team in college football. You want to be in that. You want to be in that playoff mix, because once you get in, I just feel like anybody can win.
There's an NFL coach that always, he said, you just got to make the tournament.
Yeah.
All we got to do is make the tournament. It was maybe Ryan. I don't know. One of those guys. But it was just funny because he always called it the tournament and nobody ever used that term before. But that's all he ever said was, hey, all you got to do is make the tournament and anything can happen. This is one of those years in college football where just get there, find out what happens.
Yeah, 100%. All right, Randy, we got there with this podcast. Thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it. I know it's late in Tejas. I definitely appreciate it. And I don't know. I don't know what you're doing Saturday, but maybe we'll have a chance to do a react after a big Texas win, hopefully.
Hope it's a big Texas win for sure.
All right, buddy. Hey, for Randy Boone, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.
Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. And you can reach him at 832-557-1095. Or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years. And he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.